Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be reviewing the new films Sicario, Day of the Soldado, and Uncle Drew. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, 4th of July movies, and the home cinema roundup featuring the return of Will and Grace, now on home video. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Harlan Ellison, classic, famous, and often contentious science fiction writer. A writer, passed away this week at age 84. And this also gives me a chance to throw in another rest in peace to another one from the science fiction writing world, you know, the magazines and books. Gardner Dewar, he passed away about a month ago on May 27th. And real quickly about Gardner Dewar, I never crossed paths with him much, although back when I was writing science fiction back in the 90s, I did run into him a couple times. I wrote a column in a magazine called Pirate Writings, and it was called Surreal World. And this was at the time of the X-Files when I wrote this. And so I was talking about alien autopsies and the Montauk Project and Men in Black. It was all this stuff that was percolating in pop culture in the mid to late 90s. Like I said, basically help pushed on by the X-Files. My big run-in with Gardner Dewar, because he never published anything of mine in Asimov Science Fiction, He actually took me to task in one of his year's best science fiction anthologies, where he basically praised the magazine Pirate Writings that I wrote for, up and down, said it's one of the best semi-prozines out there, except for this article series that's written. He didn't even name me out. He just said this article series, it was called Surreal World, and, basically really dismissed me. So that was my big run-in with the Gardner Dewar. And I took it in stride. I mean, from a professional level, we didn't see eye to eye in what we liked science fiction wise, but it's always sad to see somebody pass, especially somebody who's a giant in the field. And then moving on to Harlan Ellison, who passed this week. Harlan Ellison was unique. He was this unique character. He was sort of the literary equivalent of Neil deGrasse Tyson, where he's steeped in something that doesn't take a lot of like on-camera personality. I mean, when you write science fiction, you don't need to have a great personality in the media. You just have to write well. But Harlan Ellison was very volatile, and he could speak. He was very articulate, and he was extremely opinionated, which came off in his writings and in his speaking. And if you've never heard him speak, I found this clip. Ellison had actually posted this a couple of years ago. It was a series he did on this TV show called Sci-Fi Buzz, which was on the Sci-Fi Channel, which was what sci-fi was before. And this was like right when it began in the early 90s. And he did basically a weekly commentary on the show. And this is Harlan Ellison basically giving you a look at who he is.
My name is Harlan Ellison. That's H-A-R-L-A-N. I'm a writer. Call me a science fiction writer, and I'll come to your house, and I'll nail your pet's head to a coffee table. I'll hit you so hard your ancestors will die. I'll hit you so hard your grandmother will bleed. I'm a writer. There's no adjective in front of it. I'm just a writer. I'm nobody's hero. I'm as often wrong as I am right. I will chivy and harass you, and I dearly hope I will insult you. And if I insult you, it's probably because you deserved it. That name was Harlan Ellison.
For as much as you can disagree with him, and for as much as you can disagree with his style or his approach, you couldn't deny the fact that this guy was a force of nature. And he's so well known for not just in writing in terms of the books he's written, but in movies and television. I mean, his episode of Star Trek he wrote was City on the Edge of Forever, one of them he wrote. That's considered one of the best episodes ever. That's the one where they kind of go through this time portal and they meet Joan Collins. Well, not Joan Collins. She plays a character in it. And even when he did the Sci-Fi Buzz commentary, it was called Harlan Ellison's Watching. He ended up quitting, which is not uncommon for Ellison to have done. He gets in a fight with his editors or whatever. And they brought in a bunch of other people to try and continue it on. They brought in John Carpenter, but he had some of the same views, but he just wasn't the same. personality-wise. Godspeed, Harlan Ellison. You're going to be missed. You are a force of nature. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is for The Predator, which opens on September 14th.
I look up and I catch what falls out of the sky.
What's on the ship?
Tell me about the mission. Did you see anything unusual?
It's above our pay grade.
I get a cookie now.
I've always liked the Predator movies, but I will easily look back at them and say they're not. It's not a good series. I mean, the first movie is quite good. I mean, John McTiernan directed it. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger in his heyday. It's one of the movies that made him an action star. You had Carl Weathers off of his Apollo Creed times. And you got like Jesse the Body Ventura. I mean, you've got all these people in the movie that are like iconic, not just in science fiction because they're in Predator, but they're just big guys, big name guys. And then it's Predator 2, I like a lot. I've always liked Predator 2 a lot. And I remember seeing that in the theaters. And then they never got that Predator 3 until they did Alien vs. Predator. And I liked Alien vs. Predator. It could have been better, but I liked it. Alien vs. Predator Requiem, that's where it started to really kind of go off the wall and bizarre and brutal. And I have issues with that movie. That's not my favorite. But I have to say the worst one in the series was Predators, because it was trying to set it up as being this big, sort of like Aliens have all the Predators here, and it was just like six of them. it just didn't fit the bill. This one I'm kind of looking forward to. I like the fact that Shane Black's directing it, and the reason that's important, not just because I liked Iron Man 3 and the nice guys, but also he has a history with Predator. He was one of the mercenaries. He played one of the mercenaries in the first movie, so him, that's sort of some family connective tissue there. This does look like it's feels like it's coming off of Alien versus Predator Requiem a little bit, with in terms of the setup, at least the look of it and the feel and sort of what they're approaching, only it's not as bizarre and brutal from a personal perspective. But it looks like it might be a good solid Predator movie. It's opening in September, so it's not going to be a huge movie, but I'm looking forward to it. The next one I want to hit is How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which opens on March 1st of next year.
Wow.
It's a hidden dragon world.
Toothless, go introduce yourself.
Toothless has a girlfriend.
I've hunted every Night Fury, except yours. Hand him over.
I will never give him up.
Then I will destroy everything you love.
I have sort of a weird relationship in terms of my appreciation for the How to Train Your Dragon movies. I didn't particularly like the first one. I know people thought it was the greatest animated film of the year. I was kind of underwhelmed by that one, and I was surprised at how much people loved that first one. I haven't gone back and revisited it in a long time. I will say that the sequel I thought was quite good. I actually thought that was more interesting and had better character development, and I thought visually was better than the first one. This one looks like it's visually really stepping it up, which is not uncommon for a movie that's going to be made a couple years later. You know, you get advances in technology. But overall, it looks like it's kind of following a similar story we've seen before, where it's like this is the next step for them to all hide. I don't know. Story-wise, we'll see. I thought that the story in the second one was really good. This one almost feels like an afterthought. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about movies to watch on the 4th of July on Fat Guys at the Movies. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. It's an odd week where 4th of July falls. 4th of July isn't until Wednesday. By the time we have another show, Fat Guys at the Movies, Independence Day will be gone. So if you're having an idea of what to watch and you can't get tickets to Hamilton, here's some ideas. 4th of July isn't just about fireworks and barbecues and parades. And while those are great and fun, they're also about movies for me. So here are some suggestions of, I like to break it down into a couple categories. And the first category I want to look at is movies that are basically about the American Revolution, because that's what 4th of July, when I think of it, that's what it means to me. I mean, that's the birth of our country. So some of the movies that are very directly related to the American Revolution, you've got, of course, 1776, which is the musical. And it's not a great musical. It does run a little bit long, but it's getting a little bit of a resurgence. In fact, I think my son's high school theater troupe is going to be doing 1776, the musical, which will be interesting. It's been a while since I've seen it, but, like I said, Hamilton's such a big thing. I think they're going to try and dust off old favorites for that one. There's also Johnny Tremaine. Not a whole lot of people remember Johnny Tremaine. This was a movie made in the late 50s, I believe, mid to late 50s, by Disney. And it was basically meant for the Wonderful World of Disney on TV. The problem was, is they broadcast in black and white back then, and they shot the movie in color. And, it was a big screen movie. So Disney released it in theaters as well. And it aired as a two-part series on the Wonderful World of Disney, but it also had a theatrical run. And this is a story of, it's based on a book. And it's about a kid who joins the Sons of Liberty. So it's a nice look back at some Revolutionary War stuff, but in a little bit more of a sanitized Disney setting. And this goes back to the days when they were making stuff like Treasure Island and those kind of movies that was very different than kind of what they make now. But Johnny Tremaine, I always enjoyed that movie. I remember reading the book when I was a kid and in fifth grade and watching the movie then. So that's one to check out. And then the last one I just want to play the trailer for, which is an interesting choice.
Before this war is over, I'm going to kill you.
Why wait?
I'll come back.
I don't know when or where they're going to strike.
Where'd you learn all that riding, shooting?
My father taught me.
How many were there?
Maybe one.
One man.
Sounds more like a ghost than a man.
This ghost. Bring him to me.
I'm here to enlist every man willing. Who's with us?
This is not the conduct of a gentleman.
I'll take that as a compliment.
That is, of course, The Patriot, starring Mel Gibson. And it's directed by Roland Emmerich at a time when he was known for doing big movies like Independence Day and Godzilla. But he then did The Patriot, which wasn't about aliens or science fiction, but it did have the scope. I've seen this movie a while ago, so it's one that I wouldn't mind revisiting simply because it's a different type of movie that you'd expect from Roland Emmerich. I always thought it was a little overly brutal, but I'm curious as to how that holds up now, almost 20 years after it was made. It may not be as brutal compared to something like Sicario, which is out in theaters right now. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, talking about some 4th of July movies. And then there's some that are patriotic-themed movies or 4th of July-themed movies. And the big ones on that list, I say Born on the 4th of July is a big one. And I think that's partly because it says 4th of July in the title that's going to come to mind. But also, it's an alternative patriotic look at things. It's not a flag waver of a film. It does contemplate some of the uglier sides of war and some of the uglier sides of blind patriotism. Another one that's interesting to watch is Yankee Doodle Dandy, which is the George M. Cohen biopic starring James Cagney. That's always just that. Now that's a flag waver. That's one that's kind of fun to listen to. It's got all the songs in it and it's a bit of a high spirited movie. But the one that really kind of, to me, thinks either patriotic or government themed movies without necessarily even being a war film at all, is this one.
By far the greatest picture of filmdom's top director, three-time winner of the coveted Academy Award, the most timely, the most vital, the most significant picture ever to come out of Hollywood. A homespun boy and a hard-boiled, worldly wise girl in a picture carved out of the everyday lives of everyday Americans, with those inimitable Capra overtones of drama, laughter, and romance plus the finest supporting cast ever assembled.
Sadly, that's not a great trailer, but it's for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which is one of my favorite Jimmy Stewart movies. Of course, my favorite being It's a Wonderful Life, which is also by Frank Capra. This is just an awful trailer. I couldn't find a good trailer for this because movies had trailers were very different back in 1939. This is a wonderful movie about idealism and how that can or cannot translate to government work. And it's funny because right now things are extremely contentious in politics. And, you know, everybody has their views and I have my own political views. I don't usually discuss on the radio, but there is a real problem with civility nowadays. And we sit there and think that this has never happened. And sort of like Lincoln, Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, you go back and watch and you see how contentious it was then. And you can look back on this and you can see how corrupt a government body could be and how corrupt politicians could be. And this was almost 80 years ago or so when this movie was made. And it's a sad reminder that things really don't change as much as we want them to. But it's also a wonderful film. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish off this discussion of 4th of July movies, things to watch on the 4th of July, with the more fun movies. Any of the Captain America movies would work, except for the one with Matt Salinger in it. That one's garbage. But the ones with Chris Evans as Captain America in the Avengers series, you either got Captain America the First Avenger, you got Captain America the Winter Soldier, and then Captain America Civil War. All three of those work because they have Captain America in them, and he sort of represents the Boy Scout of American idealism. You can also watch some of the Avengers movies because he's certainly in those as well and having a strong hand. There's also Independence Day. I mentioned Roland Emmerich earlier. Yes, he did The Patriot, but he also did Independence Day, which is a lot of fun. I'm not necessarily saying to watch the sequel, because that thing was kind of garbage, but the original Independence Day, that was a phenomenon. And I remember that in the 90s. It was such a big deal, and it was so impactful. That was summer blockbusters at its best. Now, one that wasn't a blockbuster was Team America, but definitely worth watching, simply because it is such a sarcastic look at patriotism. Like I said, I think patriotism is great. I think we need patriots, but we also can't have blind patriotism. Blind patriotism is ignoring reality or more complex situations and just boiling it down to a black or white. And that can be very dangerous. And I think that Team America, in a very funny way, deals with that sort of thing. So even though it's funny and goofy and crass, it also has a message to it. But the big one, 4th of July, I can't let that go by without mentioning this film.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws.
You yell barracuda.
You're racist.
Huh? What?
You yell shark.
We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
Jaws, the original blockbuster because it takes place on 4th of July. Every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, it feels like summer. Jaws, absolutely fun to watch on 4th of July for just a little bit of fun. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Sicario, Day of the Soldado, and Uncle Drew. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the actual movie reviews. I gave a whole bunch of suggestions, but let's talk about the movies that are new this week. And the first one I want to talk about, the biggest one, I think is going to have the biggest splash, is Sicario, Day of the Soldado. In an attempt to disrupt the flow of migrants across the southern border, government agents kidnap the daughter of a crime boss to start a war among the cartels.
There's proof the cartel helped the terrorists get to the border.
The president's adding drug cartels to the list of terrorist organizations.
You can understand how that will expand our ability to combat them.
You want to see this thing through? I'm going to have to get dirty.
Dirty is exactly why you're here.
You're going to help us start a war.
With who?
Everyone.
I had a really high bar with this one because I loved the first Sicario. I thought that movie was genius. Now, keep in mind, Denis Villeneuve didn't do the sequel. I think there was something special by how he directed that first movie. Denis Villeneuve has a way of making a movie can be long and drawn out, and it can be very deliberate, but everything to me in his films, most of them, are engaging. So Sicario, the first one, surprised the heck out of me. I did not expect to love that movie as much as I did, but it was very impactful. It's gritty, and it's violent, and it's brutal, and it's unpleasant, but it's a fantastic movie. Now, it wasn't a series. It wasn't planned as a series. At least that I don't think so. I don't think it was planned as being a movie that would have a sequel. So they made a sequel. And usually that's a bad sign. Usually that can be really forced. Sometimes they can fix that step in the third movie. But a lot of times an unplanned sequel can be really rocky. But they got Taylor Sheridan, who wrote the first one, to write this one. And if you know anything about his stuff, like I said, he wrote the first Sicario, but he also wrote like Wind River last year and Hell or High Water. He's not exactly a happy-go-lucky writer. His stuff's grim and dark and deals with some very unpleasant subject material. In this film, it's very typical Taylor Sheridan, but because it's grim and dark and unpleasant, that doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It's kind of fascinating to watch because it is one of those films where you think, is there a good guy in the movie? There's plenty of bad guys in the film. But is there a good guy? I think it's a movie that also addresses some of our border issues, which of course is highly contentious right now. It's a huge deal in the public discussion out there in the zeitgeist. I mean, there's a lot of issues with the border right now that are in the forefront of the news. And this one deals with them. But because these movies go into production, you know, this was written probably at least a year and a half ago. So it's not as topical as you think it could be. And I like the fact that it's clear they could have gone in and made it more topical by just adding lines here and there, because they've done that in movies before. I don't feel they did that. I think they had a solid story and they said, let's go with this. Because it deals with the fact that the cartels are passing on the smuggling of drugs and working more on the smuggling of people. And they point out in the movie that it's a steady stream. If the people get caught and deported, they can always pay to go over again, which you don't do that with drugs. Drugs are a one-way ticket. And that's, of course, topical nowadays. But it also, it dips a little bit into terrorism, because what kind of kicks this off is some terrorists sneak across the southern border and the Defense Department starts to throw some money at it. So they suddenly have a bankroll to combat the movement of people across the border. And I'm glad that the terrorist thing just kind of was a way to open the door, because I was like, when it first started, I was like, oh God, this is just going to be a terrorism movie. And that's not what Sicario was. It's very different issues. But that was just to get the story started, and then they kind of abandoned that. And I like that, because I said I want to see more about sort of this internal cartel politics, which they don't really get into the actual cartels as much as them trying to manipulate them from the outside. Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro are both fantastic in it as actors, and the movie kept my interest. It's not as good as the first one, but it certainly is engaging. I wouldn't say entertaining, because it's grim and it's dark and it's unpleasant, often unpleasant. But I was engaged and I was interested. So I'm going to have to say that Sicario, Day of the Soldado, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Uncle Drew. A young coach tries to assemble a winning team for the Rucker Classic with senior citizen players from the 1970s.
I use everything I got on this tournament.
You lost our superstar to another coach.
This is the perfect opportunity for dads to meet Uncle Drew, the greatest blacktop player I've ever seen in my life.
All you wannabes out here don't play like Jordan.
So we trying Morgan Freeman?
Someone like you could combine the old school with the new school.
It's got to be my team,
my roster.
Yes!
Drew's putting the squad back together.
Pass the ball, Kobe.
I'm going to start off with an interesting roundabout story here. When I was in Israel to cover the Jerusalem Film Festival, I tried to sample as much Israeli cinema as I could because I was in Israel. Might as well check that stuff out. And one of the movies I saw, I don't even remember what the movie was. I don't even remember the subject of the movie. But it was this guy who was the singer from, I believe, the 70s and 80s. He seemed like an Israeli version of Tom Jones. And apparently he was wildly popular in Israel, especially back in the 70s and 80s. And it was a profile of him. And all these people they interviewed, they're like, oh yeah, I remember his song, and this song did this, and oh, this was sort of, oh, this was very cheeky and kind of naughty. And it was one of these people that I imagine if you showed it to anybody who was from Israel or lived in Israel, especially in the 70s and 80s, they would have gotten it and immediately been like, oh yeah, I know who that guy was. It's sort of like my wife and I were watching Arrested Development with my teenage son, and there's a scene in there with Henry Winkler. He plays the Bluth's lawyer, and he's in the bathroom, and he sees himself in the mirror, and he does kind of the little Fonzie, hey, why fix what's perfect look. And my wife and I just laugh hysterically. My son didn't get it. He doesn't know who Fonzie was. I asked him, do you know who the Fonz was? He's like, I think I've heard of it. You know, so I'm so out of touch with the cultural context. And that's kind of what part of my issue with Uncle Drew, and it's all me. I feel like I'm breaking up with this. It's not you, it's me. I don't follow basketball. I'm not a kid from the streets. I am so disinterested in basketball. I don't watch it. I don't follow it. I don't think I could pick out of a lineup more than one NBA player. That's LeBron James, and that's just because I'm from Ohio. He's from Cleveland. I've seen him on TV enough, and I've also seen him in movies, so I might recognize him. Everyone else, I have no knowledge of it. Kyrie Irving, I don't know who that is. I know he's a famous basketball player. He's in this movie. So I come to this thing completely culturally ignorant. I didn't even know there was a Rucker Classic. That is how ignorant I am of basketball. And apparently it's a big thing. Who knew? Apparently everyone but me. So my point being is I don't know anything from the cultural context of Uncle Drew. I didn't even know this was based on Pepsi commercials, but it was. Now, with all that said, this movie's a cute movie. It's got its heart in the right place. It has some very funny moments. I think the actual acting in it is pretty decent. Kyrie is, he's not a movie star. He's not an actor by trade, but he does okay in that caricature role he's in. Sort of like Shaquille O'Neal. He plays a character. I know who that is, but does he even play basketball anymore? I don't think so. I don't know. He could. I don't know. I don't know any of this. I mean, he's certainly better than he was in the Grown Ups movies with Adam Sandler, but that's not a very high bar to set. But ultimately, it's a road movie. It's about these people trying to get this team back together, and then they eventually have the basketball moments. It's corny and it's formulaic at times, but you know what? It's like I said, it's a comedy that's it's not crass, it's not raunchy, which is, I don't mind raunchy comedies, but not all of them have to be that way. But it's also not like trying to be overly squeaky clean. I think it's just a good, solid, it could be a family comedy. You take the kids to it, it's cute, and like I said, its heart's in the right place. So I'm going to have to say that Uncle Drew kind of rocks, even with all my cultural ignorance.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be looking at the Pixar short film Bao, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Will and Grace Return. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the show with a couple specialty items. I want to talk about the short film Bao, which plays in front of The Incredibles 2. Now, I know that it's, I don't like to talk spoilers, but you know, short films are short films. This one is the story of this older Japanese couple. They look like they're in their, I don't know, possibly early 60s. And the mother's making these little dumplings, and one of the dumplings comes to life and is adorable and cute, and it's the shape of a face, and it smiles, and then she starts to spend time with the dumpling and do things together and actually have this relationship, and it's kind of like her child, And the dumpling starts rebelling at a certain point, getting a girlfriend and wanting to leave home. And then at one point, the old Japanese woman, to stop the dumpling from leaving, she eats it finally, which is kind of horrifying when you look at it, because the dumpling's this little creature. And then her real son returns home, and as you watch the ending of as the things unfold, it becomes clear that the dumpling was symbolic of her actual son who grew up and left home. There has been a bit of a backlash to this movie, not like a bad backlash, not like an I'm offended backlash, but more a confused backlash. There's a lot of people, especially out there on social media. One person tweeted, "This is the most confusing 10 minutes of my life," you know. And of course, when you take things to social media, it immediately becomes people offending and yelling at each other and calling people's names. So that's kind of what this erupted into. And if you don't stay on Twitter, you don't know what this is happening. But this is an interesting blowback that comes from a big cultural phenomenon, meaning the Pixar movie Incredibles 2. What I find so interesting is not that people are confused by the short film, because it is a little confusing. It's symbolic. Anything that gets symbolic does go over the heads of some audiences. And if you watch the short film, it doesn't telegraph it and as being anything but symbolic. It's very typical of a Pixar movie to have an inanimate object take on some sort of anthropomorphic qualities, you know, and that's okay. But then it gets horrifying when she eats the dumpling. And I don't think that it's that people get that the dumpling represents her son. What people don't get is her eating the dumpling. I think that's what bothered people. But of course, because social media is not a great place to explain yourself because you're limited in character, people are saying, how did you not understand it? And you get a lot of Asians out there, because it's an Asian centric, it's Japanese. You got a lot of Asian Americans and elsewhere in the world saying, well, it made total sense to me. I cried. It was very touching. And people getting offended that basically white people don't get this very symbolic Asian cultural movie. And then saying, how dare you expect everything to be catered to you? Well, on a certain point, they are right. Pixar has been actually making a lot of effort to do more culturally diverse things. I mean, Coco last year is a great example of it. It's about the Mexican Day of the Dead. It's very much a Mexican-centric movie. The Incredibles isn't, but Coco was. And even if you look at some of the short films, there was one, I forget what movie it was in front of, but there was one called Sanjay's Super Team. And it was about this little Indian kid who, he imagined this little super team that he had in his little prayer nook or whatever it is. And it's very culturally Indian and a bit foreign to anybody who doesn't know anything about the Indian religions. On one hand, yeah, people have to realize, first of all, movies are made for a global audience. It's not just the people in America, and it's certainly not just the white people in America who are seeing movies, as evidenced by how wildly popular Black Panther was in this country. Or looking at the Fast and Furious movies and how well they do overseas, that's a very diverse cast. There's entire continents of people that don't look like Americans. So to think that that's going to be what movies are made for. No, the American marketplace it's a significant amount of box office, but it's a small percentage of the box office. But on the flip side, even though you have to realize that movies and short films and feature length animation can be made for a global audience, you also can't get offended if people don't get it. And that's okay. Especially with Bao, it's a charming little story. But you also have to realize it's not that people don't get the symbolism. It's just the eating of the dumpling got really weird and violent and shocking. And it's okay to have that reaction. It's okay to have an authentic, confused reaction to that. You don't have to yell at people because they didn't get a short film that culturally doesn't connect to them. And most of the people I see who say, well, I didn't like this movie. They're just like tossing it off as I don't like this movie. It's like getting mad at people for not liking The Last Jedi because you think Laura Dern's character was just awful, like I did. That doesn't make you a sexist. That just makes you say the character was a military idiot and didn't understand how to actually command a group of people and keep them together. Hers was a bad character, or to dislike Rose as a character in The Last Jedi. It's okay to not like Rose. That doesn't make you a racist. Now, you shouldn't become toxic about it. And the people who want to remake The Last Jedi, that's a fringe, weird little group. And people give too much focus to that because they want to have an enemy. And that happens on all sides. It's not just left or right that want an enemy. Everybody wants an enemy. Bao is a charming little short film, but it's also very confusing. And yes, the Japanese culture is very different than the American culture, especially when you look at, in a lot of Asian cultures. I had a friend who was Indonesian. And we were once talking, I was just out of college, and we were talking about, I said, well, I got to move out at some point because I'm living with my parents and I'm going to get married to my fiance. And then we move out. And we kind of had a discussion about how in the Asian cultures, it's actually considered rude to move out before your marriage. But in American cultures, it's considered rude to stick around and live off your parents before you get married. It's just a cultural difference. One's not better than the other. That's just different ways of looking at things. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's hit really quickly the box office. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom made the winner last weekend with $148 million, which is significantly lower than the previous film. And I found it hilarious watching, for some reason, online box office reporting, especially like Deadline, going through hoops and jumping back and forth and gymnastics to explain why that's good, but like Solo was a flop. And I mean, they just lambasted Solo for not doing as well as expected. But Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom doesn't even come close to the last movie, and it's not even going to come close to its final box office. Now, internationally, it's doing very well because an international audience tends to like big, explosive action movies that you don't have to follow the plot. That's why the Transformers movies have done so well, and the Fast and Furious movies. But Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, that's not a great number. Less than $150 million, that's like 70-some percent of what the last one was. And it only usually goes down from there in terms of the box office. So, I mean, that's a good number, but it's not, let's just say it's not a franchise that's on the upswing right now. Although Incredibles 2 is doing well. It made like $80 million last weekend, which is very good for it. Expect to see those topping the box office again this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm just going to really quickly hit the return of Will and Grace. The award-winning NBC sitcom returns after more than a decade, telling the story of a career woman and her gay best friend dealing with love and life.
It was a television phenomenon, winning 16 Emmy Awards.
Just chat. Just chat.
Just shut up.
Just get in the cab.
And now, do we have an announcement for you?
You. Just you.
Huh? Won't you hold?
Fran and Angelina announced their divorce the same week my relationship ends. Selfish.
I didn't watch all of Will and Grace when it was on originally, but I popped in for episodes here and there, and I thought it was a funny show, and obviously there's a political element to it, and that is brought into this one, although because the production schedule is so long for an actual television show, you can't be overly topical like South Park, which has a week-long production schedule. So they do hit politics, but that's always been a political show. This series certainly feels like the previous 8 seasons of it. But it dipped a lot in the ratings, even though they're going to get a season 10. I think this is more or less telling of these revival shows. They're going to have a run for a year or two and then lose popularity. I don't think you're going to get a Family Guy renewal type thing out of this. But if you're a fan of Will and Grace, you'll probably enjoy this season. So I'm going to say the Will and Grace return kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other movies this week that are on home video include Tyler Perry's Acrimony, Gemini, Black Lightning Season 1, and Escape Plan 2, Hades. That's probably terrible. That's it for this show. I need to go. When I come back next week, after 4th of July, I'm going to be talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp and The First Purge. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.